Good morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to those of you who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political and religious institutions which govern and influence our nation, and who recognize that the considerable malfeasance inherent in the media, the military, and global economic influences are having havoc on our society. We realize that these institutions are the problem, which means that we cannot solve this problem by simply repersoning these institutions. Doesn't matter who we vote for, the outcome will be the same. Therefore, our mission is to look behind the headlines so that we come to know who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet. Because based upon this plague of adverse political, religious, military, and economic influence, we have at most 15 years until all hell is unleashed. Complete economic collapse, world war, unrelenting propaganda, and the death of billions. As a result, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides an escape from that which will befall our planet. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's 877-300-7645. Going to begin in the financial zone, which is where we left off yesterday. In an article published by the Washington Post, we read that the U.S. government has a terrible problem with dead people. For one thing, it pays them way too much money. In the past few years, according to this article, Social Security paid $133 million to beneficiaries who were deceased. The Federal Employee Retirement System paid more than $400 million to other retirees who had passed away. And an aid program spent $3.9 million in federal money to pay for heating and air conditioning bills for more than 11,000 dead people. Now, these mistakes are not isolated. They are part of a surprising glitch at the heart of the federal bureaucracy. Because of a jury-rigged and outdated system meant to track deaths, the government has trouble determining exactly which Americans are deceased. As a result, Washington is bedeviled by both the living and the dead. The first group are people who have died but are counted as alive in federal records. Their benefits just keep right on coming. Millions of dollars pile up in unwatched accounts. Sometimes it's a matter of millions more that are spent by relatives. They receive the money of the dead person's ongoing Social Security or other kinds of benefits, and they simply spend it. It's an indication of a government that can't do anything right, and of citizens who have become grotesquely immoral. In one recent record-breaking case, a man stole his dead father's federal benefits for 26 years. A second group includes living Americans, at least 750 new people every month, whom the system falsely lists as dead. This is almost 10,000 people a year. And once you're on the you're dead list, it's almost impossible to get off of it. This summer in Utah, one man visited a Social Security office to protest his death in person. But clerks wanted more evidence. They gave him a piece of paper. The man's son recalled and said, "You need to write on this piece of paper, I'm alive." In Washington, these failures have become a long-running case study in how government systems break and stay broken. Glitches in the system have paid more than $700 million to the dead that they know of. And that's the dead that they know are dead. Almost $1 billion. How much more to the dead that they aren't even aware are deceased? That's just in one government audit, just in one year, 2008. The latest mistakes were revealed last week. In 2011 alone, auditors found Medicare paid $23 million for services provided to dead people. Those that they knew now have known and found out were dead. But how much more than the $23 million did they pay to those who are dead, but the government is unaware of their death? From 2009 to 2011, it spent $8.2 million on medical equipment prescribed by doctors who had been dead for a year. This causes this poor record keeping is often exploited by the living. Now, it's interesting. My mother-in-law passed away earlier this year. And my wife is fastidious as it relates to record keeping. She's a former banker. And she immediately sent out notifications to everyone, Social Security, to Medicare, to everyone, including doctors and hospitals and you name it, as well as insurance providers, everything, credit cards, that her mother had passed away. It became nigh on impossible with a number of both private and government agencies to demonstrate, even with her death certificate, that she had died. Matter of fact, it was the case that Medicare would not take the information provided to Social Security and wanted to continue to pay a hospital for the ongoing care of my wife's mother long after she had deceased, and we find both doctors and hospitals she found were still trying to bill the U.S. government for treatments they were providing her when she was dead. And the government wanted to pay them. It was abusive. My wife had to call even the hospitals and challenge them and say, we have proof that she died on this day and that you did not provide these services. Why are you billing the government for them? At which point she was told to bug off. It wasn't her business. It is obnoxious what happens, and the government is just wholly incompetent. And as a result, it's the same government that is now vying to have total control over your health care. They have mandated through the Affordable Care Act that private policies are now unaffordable. No one can afford them. Businesses won't be able to afford them. And the business compliance with the Affordable Care Act begins a year from now, when we're going to find a disaster that is going to be 10 times the disaster that we're experiencing right now with individuals who've had their policies canceled. And they have found, these individuals, university found, that there is no affordable solution because of what the Affordable Care Act has mandated. This is a government that can't even build a website, much less manage our affairs. A couple of weeks ago, we found that the U.S. food aid benefits were being cut from a number of recipients as an extension of a government program expires while legislators fight over further cuts. Do you know it's now 1 in 6 Americans that refuse food stamps? And they're not even food stamps anymore. We can't be asking people to have, you know, the stigma of having to do the labor of ripping the stamps from the pad and handing stamps to a grocer. Now, we can't have that embarrassment. No. Now, it's called the SNAP program. It's no longer food stamps. It's SNAP. And you get a credit card. Yes, you just hand the cashier your credit card. And there's no embarrassment. It's so much more efficient and no work required by the recipient. 1 in 6 Americans now benefit from food stamps. I mean, there isn't one chance in 10 jillion that 1 in 100 Americans is going to bed undernourished. In fact, if you look at our society, there's almost a direct correlation between obesity and poverty. Why is that? And why is it that those who are obese are on SNAP, food stamps? And why is it that when a nation, when for children, they have all sorts of programs for morning, midday, and evening meals, and meals at no cost to them, that we're providing parents and others with food stamps? It's just astonishing to me that that this part of our government giveaway of entitlements has more than doubled during the Obama years. And now we have the media wringing his hands and saying, you know, those dastardly Republicans are cutting the supplemental nutritional assistance program by $36 a month for a family of four. Some 47 million low-income Americans will be influenced by these cuts, as if taking $36 a month worth of unearned charity away from someone was a cut. You know, if you're going to give me $500 a month, and then you do it for 5 years, and in the sixth year you say, you know, I'm only going to give you $470 a month. Is that a cut? How have I been harmed by that? How would I be harmed if in the sixth year, after receiving SNAP at $700 a month, I get SNAP for $100 the following month? It's not a cut. It's not harm. Food stamps has grown to $80 billion a year. $80 billion a year in the United States. What a disaster. Republicans in Congress are seeking further reductions to the program and say that it should be targeted at only the most needy. Perhaps it shouldn't exist at all. You know, we need to go back to a system where we have to realize, yes, there are some people that are, for reasons of not of their own doing, who are temporarily out on their luck and are in need of shelter, they're in need of medical care, they're in need of food, they're in need of clothing. All right. Let's provide temporary shelter. And can build it all day long. In fact, there's not a big deal, not even expensive. Build it similar to military barracks. You know, it ought not be fancy. Ought to be reasonably temperature controlled, reasonably secure. Ought to provide a bed, ought to provide group, public restrooms. Not a big deal. They don't need welfare. Provide them shelter. Support some food kitchens in those communities. Maybe even having a kitchen as part of the shelter. Encourage people to work in them. Come back to a Shattering Mist. We have created a monster. And the monster has horrible repercussions. When you give people something that they have not worked for, that they have not earned, that they are not entitled to, it has an adverse effect on their character. You know, it is inappropriate to let a child go hungry. It is inappropriate to have someone who's down on their luck have to sleep in an unsheltered area. It would be uncivilized to have people go unclothed. But providing shelter, providing clothing, providing food is not an expensive proposition when it is done properly, and the proper way to do it is not to provide $80 billion worth of SNAP credit cards, particularly to feed the obese. It is not appropriate to provide people with welfare that is more profitable than actually working for doing nothing. We can't continue to reward failure and survive. The old excuse was that we were the wealthiest nation on earth, and that shouldn't we do something for the misfortunate? But we're no longer the wealthiest nation on earth. We're the most indebted nation on earth. We are the most bankrupt nation on earth. And we've done so much to redistribute money, to reward failure and to punish success, that there is no hope for anyone now in this nation. But the simple answer was always to provide temporary shelter for those who are between jobs, whose tragedy of some sort in life has temporarily rendered them without a home. Provide shelter. Don't make it fancy. You know, bunks in a room, common bathrooms, a kitchen facility so that those who seek shelter there, who wish to eat there, contribute to the maintenance of that facility. They contribute to daycare so participants can go out and look for a job. They prepare and clean up the kitchen, prepare food, clean up the kitchen. Pretty simple. You don't make it a reward, you make it appropriate. You let people donate old clothing and you allow them access to the clothing. It's not hard. But you can't give money to someone who has not earned it without fundamentally changing their character for the worse. Now, I understand there are always exceptions. I have long stated that if someone is born with a handicap of that cannot be overcome, whether it be physical or mental, then any society, every society, ought to do whatever is required to make their lives as comfortable as possible. It was not their fault. They didn't do it to themselves. Someone chooses to use drugs and is broke because they use drugs. They can't hold out a job because they were fired because of their drug use. I have no compassion. I think that drugs ought to be free. You ought to be able to be freely accessible anyway, so that the government doesn't say what you can and can't consume. But if you choose to smoke cigarettes and you get cancer, it's not society's responsibility to rid you of your cancer. If you're obese and get diabetes, it's not society's, should not be society's expense to solve your diabetes. You know, and if you're obese, it should not be society's burden to provide you with more food. A great example of what this entitlement culture brings is made available by the following story. Less than one in five, that would be 20%, less than 20%, so we're dealing with between 15 and 20% of third graders from low-income families. Low-income families, now that would be those that would be the primary recipients of food stamps, of welfare, of other government subsidies like the reverse income tax credit. Less than one in five third graders from low-income families score at or above the national averages in math, reading, or science. And only about half maintain a healthy weight. Yeah, most are overweight. Now, the reason that they don't score at or above the national average in math, reading, and science is all attitude. It's all character. They're not born, you know, wealth has nothing to do with your genetic makeup as to whether or not you have the mental capacity to process information. You aren't born dumb or smart. Yeah, I'm sure that there are some that are gifted mentally and others that are a little slower mentally and that they were born that way, but it has nothing to do with one's income. You know, Einstein was not the son of a nobleman. He was the somewhat of a common laborer. He himself worked in the post office. That is the nature of things. Why did they not prevail? Because of their attitude. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. If, as a parent, you've chosen to be a dependent upon government, a parasite on society, and receive your welfare check, to receive your food stamps, to not work, to not make a contribution, the likelihood is that you're going to raise children that are going to have the same attitude. In fact, you may be in that position because your parents were in that position, and that we have created now generations of dependent parasites who just have no interest in expending the effort that is required to actually earn a living, to support oneself. And so what happens when the children of somebody whose character has been broken because they no longer contribute to their own situation. They don't pay for their own food. They don't pay for their own housing. They're in government-assisted housing. They're just not making a contribution. Sit around and drink all day. What are the children going to do in such a situation? Most of these situations, too, you don't have mothers and fathers who are together raising their children. You don't have husbands and wives who have decided to stay married or may have been even married in the first place. So what are the children going to do in a home, if you want to call it that, where their parents don't show any capacity, any willingness to be accountable, to invest in themselves and their family, or even to stay together, to honor relationships? What's going to happen? The children are going to use drugs. Children are not going to invest the energy that's necessary to learn and perform well in school. They're not going to have the proper attitude that enables them to work effectively. They won't have seen their parents establish a work ethic, and they won't have one themselves. And so even if they were to go out and try to find a job, they wouldn't even know how to perform at that job or hold the job or know what it means to show up at time, on time, to devote oneself to that job and to perform admirably. You know, we are literally conditioning a society to fail and rewarding their failure. It's what we're doing now with the Affordable Care Act. Punishing success, rewarding failure. It is devastating. Of course, those who put together this report by the Anna E. Casey Foundation said that what they think is the requirement here is to include stronger parental leave policies. So rather than stronger policies to encourage parents to be more dedicated to their jobs and to their children, no, they want their parents to be able to leave. They want mental health services for new mothers. Why? Because women are getting pregnant that aren't prepared to even take care of themselves, much less a child. What do they want? They want affordable daycare and preschool. They don't want it affordable. They want it free. Yeah, you know, what's affordable to someone that doesn't work? And why is it society's responsibility and not the parents' responsibility? It's a extraordinarily sad situation, and it was inevitable. That was what the Great Society was going to bring. It is why those who opposed it in 1965, when Lyndon Baines Johnson proposed it, used this exact example and said that the character disaster that this will bring upon those who are now rewarded for being dependent will destroy our society, destroy those individuals, and ultimately destroy society. And it has. On our next item from the news, I want to return just briefly to the disaster that is the Affordable Care Act, which is, of course, the antithesis thereof. I don't want to call it Obamacare because there is nothing caring about it. And if you call it by its true name, the Affordable Care Act, that's a joke, because what it has made is health care unaffordable for those who were previously trying to buy it. Documents show, according to Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, that the government doesn't have any clue as to how many people have signed up for it. All they know is that it is in the low 100s, and here they have a website that captures data. And one of the things about this kind of technology, having been in the technology business, is that we always knew precisely who was using our system, how much they were spending, what they were looking at, what their experience was like. We knew our totals by revenue and by individuals, by hour, by day, by moment. And here's a government, a month after it begins its program, hasn't a clue as to how many people they have served. That alone ought to be enough to cancel this horrible plight on our society before it continues to destroy. I find it interesting. This is a report by Reuters. The U.S. Justice Department said earlier this week that it had joined a lawsuit filed by a whistleblower against the United States Investigation Services, a private firm that vetted Edward Snowden before he linked documents about U.S. spying efforts. So the United States, rather than take responsibility for its own crimes against its citizens, and everything that Edward Snowden revealed showed that the United States government was in violation of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Therefore, the criminals were the administrators in the U.S. government. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to find the most serious criminal, it would be James Clapper, who lied under oath to Congress saying that the NSA did not engage in broad-based spying on Americans or collecting of data on Americans, which was an outright lie. He perjured himself. That was a criminal act. We ought to go after whatever firm vetted James Clapper. But no, the United States wants to blame the United States Investigations Services, a private industry, hold them accountable for Edward Snowden. Now, the reason that these individual firms are used is because the government doesn't want individuals on its payroll. What it wants is, when it comes to a highly technical skill, an expensive skill set, rather than to have to pay those people directly and have all of the associated costs in terms of retirement, in terms of the pensions, in terms of health care benefits, in terms of holidays, and in terms of job security, so you really don't have to do anything and you can't be fired if you're a federal employee. They don't want any of that associated with the high-paying, high-skilled jobs that would be afforded and appropriate for an Edward Snowden. So what do? They go to firms like Booz Allen, and they have Booz Allen hire them as independent contractors. No benefits, no health care, no pensions, no holidays, no guaranteed of future employee of employment. And that's what gets the government into a pickle in this regard. Now, the lawsuit is not about the firm's review of Snowden. It alleges that the United States Investigations Services failed to perform quality control reviews in connections with its background investigations. It was originally filed in Alabama more than 2 years ago. The government's decision to join the lawsuit adds to the building pressure on the firm, which the U.S. government's, which is the U.S. government's biggest contractor for investigations of potential employees. Now, mind you, Edward Snowden was an employee. This article from Reuters says the firm also vetted Aaron Alexis. Do you recall that name? Well, he was the technology contractor who killed 12 people in Washington in the Navy Yard a month or so ago. Now, what's amazing here is that Aaron Alexis was at one time a U.S. government employee. He worked in the U.S. military. But he was an independent contractor when he was hired at the Washington Naval Yard. Now, to be in the U.S. military, the U.S. military had to do a background check on him. And the military had to keep records on him. And the military's records on him were horrible. And yet, they hired him as a technology contractor based upon the investigations by United States Investigation Services, and relied on what they found versus their own internal records. This is how screwed up the government is. And rather than blame themselves, when they knew, in fact, that this guy had a horrible service record, they want to blame a private firm for this man going postal on them. Now, mind you, guys like Aaron Alexis, the murderer, and Edward Snowden, the hero, are not federal employees because they're too expensive. They can't become federal employees because at the rate that they have to be paid for their skill set, with the soft schedule, with the excessive holidays, with the excessive vacation pays, with the guarantees against being fired, with the excessive benefits, both health and pension, the government couldn't afford them. So it pays a firm like Booz Allen to hire them as independent contractors. The very thing, by the way, that if you were doing this as a business, you'd be roasted by the government. You'd probably have your CEO jailed because you would be trying to get around federal employment laws by hiring an independent contractor. Even if you have a maid, you can't hire them as an independent contractor unless you can prove that they're working for lots of other people. But in this case, these individuals were working exclusively for the government. And yet the government used this ruse to have them at arm's length. Something that if a business or a private individual attempted to do, they would be pursued with criminal charges. It is yet another example of how the U.S. government does not play by the same rules that it imposes on everyone else. There was a outrage that permeated the news about a week ago, and that we were doing long-term studies of both global warming, debunking the myth of man-made global warming, and then jumped into the president's lies regarding the Affordable Care Act. I postponed the review of this, but by the way, before I get to it, I should tell you that as we consider the president's lies, the president is now lying about his lies. You know, when he said that we if you love your existing policy, if you like your policy, then you'll be able to keep your policy. Well, since that was a lie, the president is now saying about his lie that what he claims to have said is that if you like your policy, if that policy is unchanged since the law went into effect, you can keep your policy. Well, he never said that, ever. So now you have the president lying about his lies. When we return to Shattering Myths, though, we'll consider Google. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're covering the U.S. Government's malfeasance relative to capturing the keystrokes of Americans, infringing on their constitutional rights. In this particular case, we read that Google has expressed outrage. Now, outrage is a pretty strong term. Following a report that the U.S. National Security Agency, NSA, has hacked its data links. Links is a very important term here. An executive at Google said it was not aware of the alleged activity, adding that there was an urgent need for reform. In other words, this is not part of anything that was part of the PRISM program, where the NSA forced through government mandates firms like Microsoft, firms like Google, firms like Facebook to give them access to all of their data files on every American's use of the Internet. That's not what this is. This is a revelation that the U.S. government hacked into the data links between the servers without a court order. The comments follow a Washington report, Post report, based upon the evidence provided by Edward Snowden, claiming that the NSA hacked links connecting data centers operated by both Google and Yahoo. So getting amalgamated data out of the servers by mandated court order was not enough for the NSA. They actually hacked in to the data lines connecting Google's and Yahoo's data centers. The NSA director said it had, quote, did not have access to the company's computers, end quote. General Keith Alexander told Bloomberg TV, quote, we are not authorized to go into a U.S. company's servers and take data, end quote. Oh, he was lying through his teeth. Now, the statement that he made is actually true. It just happens to be a red herring. They are not authorized to go into a U.S. company's servers, but they are authorized through the PRISM program to force these companies to provide all of the information in their servers. And then he says that they are not authorized to take the data from the servers, and he says they did not have access to the company's computers. No, they didn't. What they did is they stole the data as it was being transferred between the servers. They hacked the connection. So what he said was partially accurate, but it was a red herring. It had nothing to do with the claim. Correspondents say that this is not a direct denial of the latest claims. In other words, he was obfuscating the issue. The revelations stem from documents leaked by U.S. intelligence contractor Edward Snowden, who had been granted temporary asylum in Russia and is wanted in the U.S. for in connection with the unauthorized disclosures. The documents say that the records were gleaned daily from the Internet's giants' internal networks. They reveal that the NSA intercepted the data at some point as it flowed through fiber optic cables and other network equipment connecting the company's data centers rather than targeting the servers themselves. The data was intercepted outside the United States, the documents imply. The data the agency obtained, which ranged from metadata to text to audio and to video, was then sifted by an NSA program called Muscular, operated at the NSA's British counterpart, the GCHQ. The NSA already has front-door access to Google and Yahoo using accounts through a court-approved program known as PRISM. So Google's chief legal officer, David Drummond, said Google did not provide any government access to its systems. We have long been concerned about this possibility of this kind of snooping from the government, which we continued to extend, which is why we kept continued to extend encryption across more and more Google services and links, especially the links in the slide, Drummond said in a statement. We are outraged by the lengths to which the United States government seems to have gone to intercept data from our private fiber networks, and it underscores the need for urgent reform. Think about that. The United States government, which says hacking is illegal, has become the world's biggest hacker. They say that stealing corporate information is illegal, and they've become the world's greatest thief.